Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider. It is Monday, February 2nd. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined again by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of both Irish Illustrated and Football Scoop. And guys, since we previously convened last Monday, Al Washington moved to the Dolphins. Notre Dame basically hired a defensive backs coach to replace Mike Mickens. Malachi Fields took the first step in elevating his draft status with a strong Senior Bowl. And I think right about since the time we began this intro, Notre Dame has also basically hired Michigan linebackers coach, former Michigan linebackers coach, Brian Jean-Marie for that same position in South Bend. Let's start there, guys. Jean-Marie is a kind of popped up in the old text chain after Nick Lozinski did. But JB, how did this all go down?
Yeah, there's a number of factors at play here. First of all, Jean-Marie is absolutely elite. First met him a few years ago when he was on staff at the University of Tennessee. He's just concluded his second staff at the University of Michigan. But to backtrack real quickly, his impact at the University of Tennessee was immense, and they tried really hard to keep him from returning to Michigan. And what ended up happening was that Michigan did a three-year deal for an assistant position coach, which at the time, even though it was 2023, just was not happening very much in college football. And Tennessee athletics director Danny White, whom Notre Dame people know, refused to go to a third year to retain Jean-Marie. And so he returned to Michigan, helped the Wolverines win a national championship. He's considered one of the best position coaches in the country. He's a really good recruiter. He played at App State. He's been at Texas. He's been at Georgia Tech. He's been at Louisville as well, but he's just a really, really strong impending addition for Notre Dame. And another key element to consider here, he was under contract through at least this time a year from now of 2027, which means Notre Dame's going to be able to hire Brian Jean-Marie because he was not kept by new Michigan coach Kyle Whittingham, and Michigan is still going to be on the hook for part of Jean-Marie's salary for this first year. So I would imagine you can expect his contract structure to reward him a little bit more in Notre Dame dollars beginning in year two than it will in year one. He shares the same agent as Marcus Freeman, that being Clint Dowdle. He's got some other commonalities with these guys. They've gone head to head through the years. He's faced Chris Ash and some different elements before. So I just think this is a really, really strong hire for Notre Dame, for Marcus Freeman, for Chris Ash. I referenced that I met him for the first time a few years ago when he was at the University of Tennessee. I actually spent some time with him and multiple Michigan coaches this past March at the NFL Combine down in Indianapolis. We ended up at the same spot for lunch and visited for quite a bit at that time. Just a really bright individual who I think will be well positioned to take over what I'm on the record as saying I think is the most complete and best linebacker room top to bottom in college football.
Tim,
well, first of all, I want to throw this out there to you, Tim, now that they've hired a defensive backs coach and a linebackers coach, over under 0.5.
Over.
Of course, we're talking about coaching changes, and originally
every week
it was 0.52 coaches ago, and I guess it's got to be at 0.5 again.
Yes,
we're going to be working on the pronunciation, but just like Javonte Jean-Baptiste, this is Brian Jean-Marie, so we're going to try to keep that in order. But yeah,
can
I agree.
Bring Javonte Jean-Baptiste with him was the question, because yeah, that,
boy, that would be wonderful. I haven't had the opportunity to, we've been aware of him. JB made us aware of him within the last 24 hours, maybe a little bit longer than that. So I want to look into him more, but I first want to talk about Aaron Henry. And then I also want to first admit that I was wrong about Nick Lozinski. I know there were other people out there in the industry that said he was never a candidate. I would argue that there's some semantics involved there, but they were right and I was wrong, obviously, because Notre Dame has Brian Jean-Marie now as their linebackers coach. But Aaron Henry, I love everything about Aaron Henry. You know, his background as a player, three-time academic All-American, and his development of quality defensive backs is similar to Mike Mickens. Don't need to compare. None of that matters. Mike Mickens was the elite of the elite, and I think Notre Dame went out and did the best job they possibly could to replace a Mike Mickens. But you want to talk about, I mean, like Devin Witherspoon, who is the number 5 overall pick in the draft. He was unranked. He was unranked coming out of high school, and he has a couple other players that were drafted early in the draft that were 1,711 and 1,600 and whatever. So he can develop just about anybody, but he obviously will have an opportunity to work with a lot more proven talent coming out of high school, or highly rated talent coming out of high school. So I'm interested to dive a little bit deeper into Brian Jean-Marie, but Aaron Henry, I wrote a story on this morning. I just think that when you consider what you lost in Mike Mickens, they did a hell of a job.
Well, two things about it. Aaron Henry just jumped into a heck of a room to start to coach for Notre Dame. And number two, we believe that Jay Vilai was the original option. He's going to the Buffalo Bills. I'm sure the lure of the NFL was part of it. So were some, what I have been told, and I think you guys will back up, some unreasonable demands for his new position in South Bend, Indiana.
Extensive demands.
Is that good, JB? Extensive demands? Unreasonable is me editorializing. How about extensive demands for his position?
Yeah, it was not a typical, where do I sign, what will my salary be? It was certainly more nuanced than that. I do want to say one thing quickly on the Aaron Henry front, and I know there's all the speculation out there now. He had just signed a new 3-year contract extension less than a year ago. And I have some further intel there that I think folks are going to find really interesting. And that is, another member of the Illinois coaching staff told one of my colleagues over the weekend, yesterday actually, as the news was unfolding, quote, "I had no idea I was competing against my boss for the same job." So if you think that Aaron Henry was being shoved out the door at Illinois, I would beg to differ, or certainly would say if that's the case, it was not something universally known inside the Illinois building. Again, that's a direct quote. There's no hearsay involved there. That's Coach A to one of my close colleagues saying, "I had no clue I was fighting my own boss for the same job."
That's pretty funny. I mean, it has been, I was going to bring that up because there's been a lot of speculation, I'm sure, on the Illinois message board, also fair amount on Twitter too, that this was what we like to call soft firings in the business. Like when you find Charlie Molnar, the head coaching job at Connecticut, that could be a soft firing. But yeah, JB, your info kind of refutes that. But I have a relevant question, I think, that makes a lot of sense from Trev Alive from our message board. Isn't this a step down in responsibility for Henry? Any insight into his rationale for making this jump to Notre Dame? Because remember, he was the defensive coordinator. My opinion, this is just the quick thing, defensive coordinator at Illinois is not as good of a job as defensive backs coach and co-defensive coordinator, which will probably really be passing game coordinator, to be honest, at Notre Dame as a top five team.
Well, he struggled as a defensive coordinator, especially when you get hooked up against Kurt Cignetti and he hangs 63 on you and you're down by 4 or 5 touchdowns at halftime. He struggled. Now, his second year as defensive coordinator was a real nice bounce back from his first year. And you could argue, you know, IU did that to a lot of people. I'm sure I picked Illinois that day to cover, and it wasn't even close against IU. So there were some struggles along the way. And this is what, you know, this is my whole idea behind people always saying, you know, give the coordinator's job to Mike Mickens. And I'm not saying Mike Mickens can't do the job. It's just that you have to understand that the two jobs are very, very different. One is teaching, you know, one specific position group ahead, you know, with a specific coverage on that play. Defensive coordinator, you have to account for all 11. When do you bring pressure? When don't you? You have to make the call with the whole world watching. It's a completely different job. And so, you know, I'm not saying that Henry wasn't a good defensive coordinator, nor am I saying that Mike Mickens can't be a good defensive coordinator. I'm just pointing out the two jobs are very, very different on game day, and not everybody can be a coordinator, and not everybody can be a great position coach.
And let's see, frankly, and I don't have the 2025 NFL draft in front of me, but I wonder how many NFL prospects that Henry was working with at Illinois either of the last couple of seasons. So I would take that into account. Sometimes it became very obvious this year that Illinois was in a gunfight with a plastic knife. And I think that showed up at different times. You know, they managed to upset Southern Cal, but Southern Cal still scored 32 points in that game. And again, like, Illinois is not just ripe with the same talent that I think he'll come in. He's got a comfort level working with and knowing Chris Ash from Ash having coached him and them being around each other previously. One other note to consider that I think will help the transition, Andy Boo, the senior defensive analyst for Notre Dame, worked previously with Henry at Illinois. He was at Illinois. Boo was prior to coming to Notre Dame a year ago around this time as a senior defensive analyst. And so there's some more commonality there. Certainly you would know that Marcus Freeman and Chris Ash would have doubled back around and drilled down on Aaron Henry in conversations with Andy Boo. So I think that all of those things are elements to consider in this move. It's look, you don't want to be the guy, frankly, that replaces Mike Mickens in a lot of ways because he was so productive and so universally beloved. But it takes some guts to do that, and Henry is doing that. And I think that it's been a tough few weeks for Notre Dame, but I like the way that Notre Dame is reforming its defensive staff.
Tim, yeah. if I could throw out a stat here. This past year, Notre Dame had 21 interceptions, 20 of them by defensive backs. In 2022, when Ryan Walters was still the defensive coordinator at Illinois before he took the Purdue head coaching job, they had with Aaron Henry. I keep wanting to say Henry Aaron. We're definitely going to ask him.
I'm going to call him Aaron Hayden from Tennessee at some point.
We're definitely going to ask him if there was some family decision made there as it relates to Aaron Henry. But in 2022, when they led the nation with 24 interceptions, 23 were by defensive back. So as great a season as Mike Mickens had this past year with the interceptions, his DBs had 20. And then 4 years ago, Aaron Henry's DBs had 23.
I do like the hire. I'm going to double back to last week and say what I said, that I would have gone with Mike Mickens under any circumstance at this point in his career to make him the coordinator. I started doing something for Monday Musings where I got Coach Al Washington. We'll get to Al Washington in a second. Yeah. We'll get to Al Washington, Max Bulla, and Mike Mickens have all left Notre Dame's defensive staff. I started doing their best players coached, recruited, inherited. I did a first string, second string, and third string for Mike Mickens on that. And the third string is damn good. And he was fantastic. I wanted to say real fast. So actually Aaron Henry kept Notre Dame on the playoff because they upset USC. That would have been the big win if USC was undefeated there instead of losing to Illinois. So he kept, people can blame Aaron Henry now, along with everybody else in the world for that one. And I want to quickly go to what you said though, Tim, about coaching a position group and coaching an entire defense or an entire unit, because Clark Lee said it better than I ever can. He went from linebacker coach to coordinator. And before he did it, this was spring. It definitely was not a game had not been played. We asked him what the difference is, and he used this analogy, 2,000 more words than I'm going to use, but he used this analogy. It's like you're sipping through a straw for linebackers coach. And it's like you have this giant bucket of the same stuff going on and this conglomeration of all these things when you're a defensive coordinator. And that's what I'm learning as time goes on. I can't just be sifting through the straw. I mean, you know, Clark Lee says plenty of more philosophical things than I ever will. And he actually somehow uses more words than I ever do, which is a rare thing to do. Going to switch gears here really fast before we get back to Al Washington. Malachi Fields shined in Senior Bowl workouts. I mean, we're going to have a question on that we're just going to throw in segment one, guys, because there's nothing. The only thing worse than playoff talk in October for me is mock drafts all year long. Got this question from Irish Happiness. Malachi Fields just received first round buzz, and Jadarian Price was listed as a second rounder in a recent mock draft. That mock draft, by the way, was by Matt Miller? Matt Miller, right?
Yes.
Corey Robinson fame.
I was going to say, who we've criticized Kizer, in the
number
past.
One overall draft pick fame. Corey Robinson, first round draft pick fame. But no, that was a long time ago. But he said, all right, shoot your shot, guys. Fields in the first versus Price in the second versus Wagner in the third or none of the above?
JB.
Give me those options one more time, T.O.
Fields in the first, or Price in the second, or Wagner in the third, or none of the above.
Yeah, I think J.D. Price will go no worse than the second round. So that would be
– that's your shot.
That's awesome that Malachi Fields is generating some of that buzz. It's considered, I think, a fairly deep receiver class. There's a bunch of diverse needs for all the teams out there. I think this draft is probably going to go a little bit heavier on linemen, both offensive and defensive linemen. We know Love's going to be a first-round pick and all of that. But I think I think Jadarian Price in the second round is my safest bet. That doesn't mean I don't think that Fields might not get drafted before him. Fields might go early the second round. I'm just not convinced that Fields is ready to zoom into the first round. Would be great for Notre Dame if he did. Yeah. Would be great to be able to say CJ Carr in his first year as a starter did this, although that would have helped a little bit more probably right now. But nonetheless, it's still a chance for Notre Dame to tout helping a guy dramatically improve his draft stock and also showing they've got a guy that can throw it around the yard.
I would say the most likely of those three scenarios is Jadarian Price going in the second round. Congratulations to Malachi Fields for tearing up the Senior Bowl. I mean, he went there and really, really, it's hard for a guy to have shined more than he did going into the Senior Bowl.
Now, let's say he has a – I don't think Fields will go in the first round.
I don't
Fields
either.
A lot. But let's say he has a Miles Boykin combine. Then we can have this discussion.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, still combine to come, and we'll see how much he does as a result of his strong performance in the Senior Bowl. I would still at this point predict him in the second round, and I think Emil Wagner goes later than the third round.
Just remember, 2 years before he'd ever played football again for Notre Dame, Eshaq Williams was a second-round draft pick by the same service. Corey Robinson was a first-round draft pick. DeShone Kizer was number one overall, and Sheldon Day was a first-round draft pick. So I think people get a little too into the team they scout and watch.
Because if Corey Robinson had been given that touchdown at Florida State, everything would have changed.
That one really hurt. That caused quite a spiral, didn't it?
Yeah.
All right, to wrap it up, guys, we started with the name Al Washington, but after the entire Marcus Freeman tenure, Al Washington was with Coach Freeman, and he'll be moving on to linebackers coach at Miami Dolphins, much to the chagrin of one Charlie O'Malley, who just lost a friend, and that's when the real world trickles in when you see those things happening.
You lost a friend, too, in Mike Mickens' son, right?
No, Charlie and Al Washington.
Oh, it was Al Washington. Yeah, it was okay. Al Washington.
Yep, yep.
Well, I think we all really, really like and respect Al Washington. Great dude. I think sometimes his coaching acumen is underrated at times. He was moved to linebackers coach, and I'm happy for him for the opportunity that he's had. Once you get to that level, now you've got to earn your keep. But you really got to earn your keep there. But I have a lot of confidence in him, and really thrilled. I think we all agree, really thrilled for the opportunity that he has.
No, I think it's awesome. Look, obviously he has the shared history with Jeff Hafley, but not only that, the new Miami Dolphins defensive coordinator, Sean Duggan, Al Washington coached him at Boston College. And so you have all these threads tying this together. One thing to continue to monitor as you talk over-unders would be, does Al Washington try to take Trey Reeder with him to Miami? That's some of the early whispers. And I would note that Trey Reeder turning down Michigan State at the time had a lot to do with the opportunity to work with Al Washington in the linebackers room. They have a very, very special bond. And again, Trey Reeder has already heard from another NFL team, so I think he would stay put at Notre Dame rather than this other NFL team, but there's been considerable action there. And then after the Super Bowl, as Clint Kubiak fills out his staff watch there, as I've alluded to, I've been told that could be something to watch with Notre Dame strength coach Lauren Lando, because those two have a shared history together.
Turning down the Michigan State Spartans is different than turning down the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
That's a tough one. No offense to George Perlis, Lorenzo White, or Charles Rogers, but I think if I'm offered something with the Miami Dolphins, Trey is 22. Is that right?
23, I think. But 23. Yeah,
all right. Well, grizzled veteran of the Notre Dame coaching staff. Yeah, that would be tough for me to turn down, but hopefully Notre Dame hangs on to Trey Reeder just a little bit longer. You're on borrowed time with all good assistant coaches and grad assistant coaches, right?
Even 23-year-olds. So we'll keep the Reeder name alive, though, because Troy Reeder is the third-string catcher for the 2026 Notre Dame baseball team.
There we go. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question from old friend Martin Evenflow. Would losing Lauren Lando to the NFL hurt more than any other positional coaching change? Because while everyone is replaceable, the timing right now is less than ideal. I really like this point, JB, because remember when Matt Bayless left before August camp, there was a theory of, hey, at least the hay is in the barn here, that Fred Hale can continue. There is not much hay in the barn right now.
No, there's not. And also different than the time when Bayless left is that you have more roster flux than ever before in college football. And even though it's minimized at Notre Dame and Notre Dame is elite at roster retention, there's still more change. There's still more players. You still brought in a bunch of guys from the portal that don't know the Lauren Lando way that other guys can help them acclimate to and understand. So yeah, I would agree. A good point. Martin Evenflow, regular podcast contributor. I would agree with that sentiment that to lose him at this time would be very, very tough for Notre Dame. Again, there's no guarantees here, but he and Kubiak have worked together previously at the Broncos. I was alerted to this by a couple of different people in the Broncos organization. I wanted to bring that information here to the podcast. It's just something that we will continue to monitor. Also of note, I do believe that Lauren Lando continues to operate his fitness centers and training facilities in the greater Denver area. And obviously, Las Vegas to Denver is a really, really short flight and an easy hop to make. So with a lot more flights daily back and forth, should he decide that he wanted to be more involved in his business's operations on a more routine basis. Not necessarily that he needs to, but he's still running those facilities. He still has a lot of ties to the Denver area and certainly Las Vegas, same division, NFL, all of that, and a comfort with Kubiak. So just be mindful of that.
Yeah, that would hurt. And, you know, there's no doubt as long as Marcus Freeman's at Notre Dame, man, this the revolving, you know, door with assistant coaches even beyond on the field, this would hurt. But my answer to the question would be it depends upon the replacement, because whoever that replacement is, if he's open-minded enough to allow the guys on the staff that remain and allow for the transition to be a little bit smoother, you know, not necessarily sticking with the way Lando ran things, but in the transition period of being a little bit more open-minded about it. But I think it's a good question. And again, as long as Marcus Freeman's around, man, he's going to be losing assistant coaches, Trey Reader, guys like that on a fairly regular basis.
That's a great point, Tim, because you could have a guy that has opposite views in some ways of Lando, but as long as that's a slow change that doesn't happen in February of 2026, it's okay.
You don't have to reinvent the wheel as a strength and conditioning coach. Now, I realize that there's the position and the job itself evolves through the years as you learn different techniques, et cetera. But be open-minded and let the transition take care of itself a little bit with the help of your people, and it can be a lot more smooth.
Got a two-parter here, and I think we all have the same answer to Kate Beasley, but I'm going to read this part anyway. Would you guys treat the Bulla, Mickens, and Washington moves as independent decisions that truly helped their careers rather than any dissension in any way on the defensive side of the ball? But related to it, remember, guys, they did lose three coaches from the defensive side of the ball. FL Iris 76, should there be cause for concern there will be early growing pains that it could lead to even the dreaded September loss?
John?
I would push back against any notes of dissension. I don't think that at all. I think there are a couple of things at play here. Number one is it's career growth. I mean, it's Max Bulla going home. It's Mike Mickens and Al Washington going to the NFL. The NFL has finally started catching up and in some cases surpassing college salaries for top assistant coaches. Heard it over the weekend from a coaching friend who has just left the NFL to return to the college level. And he hates the college calendar. He hates that he was getting transitioned into a new job and immediately going out on the road in his first days in the new job to get out recruiting. The only plus, he said, was that now it's more position specific. So coaches are truly recruiting to a position with the way the portal and NIL works, as opposed to having recruiting territories and then coming back and sharing that. But the talk from coaches is just, I mean, I know a guy in the NFL right now who is an assistant coach who turned down a coordinator position job in college at a power conference spot this cycle that would have tripled his money. And he was just like, I don't want to make the move right now because I like where I'm at. I believe in what we're doing, but also I'm not ready to go back to that calendar and I don't know if I will be. But then the other thing I would point that I know this is accurate because I've heard this, frankly, from inside the Goog, the talk about Marcus Freeman in the NFL and how long it lingered throughout the month of December and into January brought a harsh reality onto some guys that, hey, I know Marcus Freeman loves me. He can't take every single one of us to the NFL if he goes to the NFL. I have to be mindful of that. I have to be mindful of being in charge of my own career. You know, a lot of guys are like, if I don't hit the eject button and it gets pushed for me, I might not get to push the button ever again.
Just as long as the assistant coach that you're talking about that doesn't like the college calendar, JB, as long as it's not Charlie Partridge and everything's okay here.
But, yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I agree. I don't think there's dissension, but I also think that there was a level of adaptation to Chris Ash following Al Golden that, you know, I mean, everybody coaches a little bit differently. And you know, Ash comes from the Urban Meyer school of coaching, so he may be a little bit more hard-edged in some respects. But, I didn't sense that. It's a good question. You know, as far as FL Irish 76 – growing pains early, you kept the coordinator. That's the key. That's the one that is the most unsettling on an offensive or defensive side of the football staff. So I don't anticipate that part.
Yeah, it's you know, it can be a pragmatic transition. If you're keeping both coordinators, you keep the head coach, you have consistent messaging. And if you're able to also hang on to Lauren Lando, plus, yeah, again, you're going to return one of the more veteran teams in college football. I think all of those things are factors that make it okay. You know, not ideal, but okay. And again, yeah, there's growing pains. You guys have had to adjust to my jerk presence on this podcast. It happens.
I still haven't really, but there's,
yeah. Well, that's a you problem.
Yeah, you know, it was a Notre Dame problem last year, but. Here's the other thing I think that makes the adjustment a little bit easier. As long as they don't change, you guys said Lando, as long as they don't change Wisconsin, Rice, Michigan State, and Purdue, I think they're okay for this. Too, because you could make a lot of changes. You could make no changes, and you get up with the little Texas A&M in Miami. It gets a lot harder than that. That's Chris Ash. He might not have handled that well, but he was not dealt a pat hand when he showed up and had to take those two teams on to start the year, because they're two of the – one was one of the five best teams in the country. The other one was one of the 10 best teams in the country. And that's how he had to start his career. So whatever they did wrong, that did not help whatever they did right.
You're up, JB.
Yes, I am. I appreciate that. Question number three here from Irish Flyer 96. This is the most unproven running back room since what season, gentlemen?
It was actually pretty easy. I'm going to give you one that makes you happy if you're an Irish fan, and one that makes you less happy. 2020. Nobody knew Kyron Williams was even going to start. Their other running backs were Stebo Flemister, Jameer Smith, a returning and injured Jafar Armstrong, and freshman Chris Tyree, who we thought might be the starting tailback. Kyron became pretty good. The year before that, though, was 2019, when it was Tony Jones and you didn't know what else was going to happen. That was probably the one that you're like, I hope it's not. It won't be like that, but that was the one that was unproven.
Yeah, Tony did a pretty good job that year.
He did a pretty good job. Now, obviously, Kyron did an amazing job.
Well, yeah, and I don't think Aeneas Williams is Kyron Williams, so I don't think that will be as smooth as it was. But you know, again, you have a quality running backs coach, and I just want to see Aeneas Williams get a workload and see what he can do.
I would put Aeneas Williams closer to Kyron Williams than Tony Jones.
That's fair. I mean, I think that's fair. But that's not how we were evaluating.
That's not how it works.
No, that's not how we were evaluating.
There's a lost yardage. I'll be like, well, see, he's still better than.
I like your point, though, T.O., on you going to that grouping and that time period. But also remember, even at that time, there was kind of some of that surreptitious chatter in the Goog about how good Kyron Williams looked. That he was kind of coming out of nowhere, and you started to hear that chatter that this guy's going to be special. Certainly hard to know that he would be so special. He's become a Pro Bowler and an All Pro and leading the league in touchdowns, right, and things like that. But there was that chatter.
Two things on Kyron real fast. I'm sorry, Tim, go ahead.
I mean, I don't think any of us just realized how incredibly strong-minded Kyron Williams was.
Right, right. I remember in recruiting, Tom Loy loved him. And I remember after the spring game, it was his early enroll a year, you and I loved him. And then he looked like a deer in the headlights in the opener against Louisville and shut it down. We're like, all right, well, that didn't work out so well. Everybody just thinks it's over. That's not how the sport works. I mean, he was just, he's fantastic. And man, that dude is, this is funny because I could have argued, I would have argued, Kyren Williams is the best running back at Notre Dame since Jerome Bettis. And then Jeremiah Love came, and people all forget that Kyren Williams was the best running back at Notre Dame since Jerome Bettis, because that's how good Love was. Like, Kyren was. He was special.
He was a bulldog, man. Good Lord. Love the way he played. Question four is from Smiling Jack. There are dozens, parentheses, hundreds of reasons Notre Dame might not reach the Final Four next January. We're talking football, not basketball. Well, give me the number one. give me the number one reason as of today that they will reach the Final Four in college football.
I would say the returning defensive pieces, because I'm going to let JB say the easier one.
And you think CJ Carr is the easier?
I think you're going to say CJ Carr.
Well, no, I would probably say returning Marcus Freeman would be even easier than saying CJ Carr. But actually, I was going to say the collective defense as a whole. I think Notre Dame's defense and, again, continuity at the coordinator positions and Marcus Freeman. I think those two are fairly intertwined in my mind, is the defensive unit as a whole, the parts and pieces, as well as that triumvirate at the top of things.
Tim?
Defensive pieces, as I said. That was
my see. Yeah. Pete Sampson put out a stat. I should have written it down. I can look it up. But how many more defensive snaps do they have returning this year compared to – no, tackles. I'm sorry. Is it snaps or tackles?
They would have had a lot of snaps returning, so probably tackles.
Obviously, it made a strong impression on me. But I'll follow up with Pete. But they're an even more experienced defense than they were going into – to last year. I think a key is Kingston Viliamuasa, of course, coming back from his knee injury. Why is it that I think like he's Superman and he'll come back quicker than everybody else?
Yeah.
Because he plays like Superman.
I put that on the back burner because I actually think, and I kind of omitted Faison accidentally when I did this in a Monday Musings. I did the 12 best returning players. And I think I just kind of glossed over Faison. He should be in it. But I put Madden Foraimo as my 12th because I think he's going to be that good.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I just think the way he plays when he's healthy, I just expect him to come back.
Yeah, Kingston's sooner. I'm not saying he's better than Kingston Viliamuasa. I'm just thinking they'll be fine.
Yeah, no doubt. It was snaps that Sampson put out there, and I just think that speaks volumes. Now, of course, you have a whole – you got a secondary coach by somebody differently, but – a guy that's very capable. But CJ Carr, if you think about how much Mike Denbrock is going to trust him, and like you say, Tim, I mean, they don't have Miami and Texas A&M to open up with, and so the need to be great out of the chute isn't as great as it was then. But it's just such a deep, well-rounded team. I think the offensive line is going to fall into shape. We have a question about one of those offensive linemen coming up that JB is going to report on here.
No, but, I got that answer.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry, Tim.
But you think – so you go – well, first of all – You're taking one thing.
Yeah, first of all, I object to a question about a football season with one reason.
But it's February 2nd, so you can give me one reason.
Marcus Freeman came back for his fifth year. How's that?
That's a good one. All right, next question. JB, you can take this first part. Bull and Adam – because I think you've been talking about this for the entire podcast. What's more difficult for maintaining continuity in a defense from year to year, replacing only the coordinator or keeping him, but replacing all the position coaches? Could you expand on why, obviously, you believe coordinator is so much easier?
Yeah, well, and it's not just my belief. It's from talking to coaches all around the country who experience these changes. And it's because the voice in the room changes. When the lead voice in the room changes, that's an acclimation period for everyone. When the lead voice doesn't change, then it's just not. And so Notre Dame, again, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, brings back so many dudes that their players will be able to tell their new position coaches, hey, this is kind of the way we've done it. This is what Coach Ash likes. What are your thoughts here? I think, and Notre Dame has so highly intelligent of players that I think they'll have some intellectual conversations that will help make this transition better. But again, you have a defensive-minded head coach who's a former coordinator, and you have Chris Ash returning. And so for those reasons, I think that continuity is easier. I'm told it's easier to maintain when the singular voice in the room is carried over.
Pretty sure I want to ask you about the second part, because I think you've probably heard a lot of it over the last four decades from Andrew Buchanan. What matters most for the players on game day? Remember, this is not every other day. their position coach, the coordinator, or the head coach?
Great question. I mean, I love how thought out it is, but it's an unfair question because there are various aspects that come up during the game. If a corner has a technique issue that they need to correct in the first quarter before he gets torched, well, then it's the position coach.
Yep.
You know, if it's what defense you're running against what the offense does, well, then it's a coordinator decision. And then, you know, the head coach, it's 7 minutes into the game and you're at your own 45 and you're going for fourth and three. He makes that decision. So, I mean, you understand where I'm coming from. It depends upon what aspect of the game that we're talking about. But the first thing that came to mind was if a dude's screwing up, it's the position coach that's got to get that fixed in between series.
And Tim, on a related note to that, I would say like head coach and coordinator together, and maybe even the position coach, I'm not sure as much. Jeremiah Love hasn't touched the ball in an hour. Figure this out.
Yeah,
I would go head coach there, but you still have to trust your coordinator and your position coach.
Yeah,
he needs the ball. I think that, and Marcus mentioned that sometimes it's got to be like, all right, CJ, I know you made the right read. Just give him the ball.
Question number six, and certainly this has been an assiduous process from G Weave. Any word on how much Charles Jagasa is able to do during winter conditioning? Is he able to fully participate in weightlifting? T.O., the floor is yours.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think he'll have much participation in winter conditioning. You know, when there's multiple surgeries involved, that's tough for him. But, you know, there's a lot of time now between now and summer workouts and stuff. But when there's multiple surgeries in there, I don't think we'll see much of Charles Jagasa in the spring. Maybe an end of spring update where we can talk to him about how it's going. They don't really bring out a lot of guys that aren't participating though. And I understand that because you're a student athlete and you're not playing at all. And the only questions are going to be about why you're not playing, I suppose. But since it's the off season, maybe because he had a long journey. And did we talk to Jagasa since?
No.
Oh, yeah. He's a mature guy. They could bring him out maybe at some point, but I don't think we'll see a ton of Charles in the spring.
Are we going to have the gathering with Rob Hunt again at the end of,
I was wondering spring. About that. I feel like that came because of their long run.
Yeah, that's true. But boy, that sure would be that was
helpful.
That was extremely helpful to us.
I think it helped them too. So they
I don't know how it would have necessarily been a detriment for them.
No, I think it was good for the players. We didn't always ask why is this guy not participating. Like Emil Wagner, you'd have asked that every single day in the spring if he wasn't out there.
And then we didn't ask at all because we didn't have to. Look, the only thing that matters about Charles Jagasa is being ready to go when fall camp opens.
Yeah, I would say
when he's healthy, we know he's a player. Obviously, everybody needs the practice reps. He doesn't necessarily have to have those practice reps in the spring. It's as he's coming closer and closer to the season. I think that's really all that matters, not how many snaps he gets in the spring. We have a question from Blazin Sausage. How do you feel about?
Move that to your question.
Yeah. I can't say it every podcast. How do you feel about the Notre Dame men's basketball team prospects if they pull a Marcus Freeman and run it back next year? Same staff, same players, plus the incoming freshman. Let's say they add a starter level, but not huge difference making transfer as well.
Yeah, well, it's more like burnt sausage right now for me with the men's basketball program, or pick your favorite dessert, pecan pie for me, maybe, or carrot cake. It's poisoned right now. There's no reason that I see for much in the way of any optimism that's remotely rooted in reality around this basketball program. I've tweeted out the stats. I'm so defeated. I didn't feel like tweeting out the stats over the weekend when it was another double-digit loss or a couple more double-digit losses last week. That's more than one quarter of his losses now by double digits, which is, you know, just the ACC has never been worse and more than a quarter of his losses are by double digits. So, you know, the freshman kid or the kid at La Lumiere, whose dad is the strength coach, I think he is going to be a nice player. But when you say run it back next year, you've got no guarantees of keeping Harrelson. You've got no guarantees of keeping Marcus Burton. You had to pay Harrelson a bunch of money. You had to give Marcus Burton a raise that he earned with his play on the court. But he's been injured last year. He's been injured significantly this year. You don't know if he'll come back this year. Yeah, I just think, again, I've shared it before. From afar, I had such an appreciation for Notre Dame basketball, and right now it's putrid.
Yeah. If Mike Burch is listening, I want to remind him that the ACC stinks.
He likes that one.
Mike Burch, a former Notre Dame employee. Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say, JB. Harrelson Burton, we have no idea what's going to happen. And like you, I am keeping track of those double-digit losses. Man, I mean, they were no match for Syracuse on the basketball court the other night. And I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't. They're 2-7. They do have Florida State coming up, and they stink. And so they should be able to win that game at home. But, you know, I don't know.
What does
I
that
don't
mean? See it. What does that mean? It's just the relief of winning a game at home. Like Boston.
Yeah.
We won a game.
That's exactly right. And they faced some adversity against Boston College, and it was good that they hung in there. But it's Boston College at home, for crying out loud.
My feeling, Tim, I wrote about this, was the relief of beating Boston College that came from Shrews and Harrelson when they came to talk was
– Oh, yeah.
I appreciate it.
You're seeing it with the women's program, too, when they win a game.
It's not like that big. I mean, you should celebrate every win. As a coach, but like the feeling in that room was like, I was like, well, this is just like a stay of execution. And I don't mean a firing. It's just a stay of execution until the next time when something goes wrong and you have to talk about what went wrong in the press conference, like blowing a 19-point lead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like some of the things that are being done. Cole Serta was brilliant against Virginia. Yep. He's still got to get, you know, his inconsistency. When you're a shooter and you play 27 minutes and score 5 points, well, then those are really wasted minutes, because you're not getting a whole lot of help in any other areas on the stat sheet.
To answer the question, go ahead, Debbie.
I was just going to say real quickly, to your point, T.O., about blowing a 19-point lead at home like that, it's not just blowing a 19-point lead at home. It's manufacturing ways to lose. And you can't manufacture ways to lose in year three, not if you have stabilized a program and are trying to convince people you have it going in the right direction.
The one thing Shrewsbury has going for him is he's got a bunch of young, eager kids that are hanging as tough as they possibly can. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'd be stunned if I don't think there will be a pithy tweet saying run it back. I don't think that the social media response to that would be one where they tweeted and turned off notifications. I don't think we'll get anything like that. I was told over the weekend by someone who has been a full-time Notre Dame basketball employee of late that Micah Shrewsbury signed a 7-year contract upon his hiring to Notre Dame. So Notre Dame doesn't tend to strike millions and millions of dollars on fire anymore. Not since Charlie Weiss walked out that door, I guess.
Kind of a related question here from Capo Creek and then Joe Ronnie Moe. Capo Creek says, is Coach Freeman giving Ash too much latitude to bring in his own guys? But I think this one's more important, Priester. How do you feel about the relationship hiring practice in general, from Joe Ronnie Moe? Do we focus too much only on the pros or only on the cons? I like that part of the question.
Yeah, I do too. I think when people question about, you know, hiring people that you worked with before, of course you do that. It's sports. It's who you feel more comfortable with. It's who you know you can go to war with. That's only a natural thing. Plus, Chris Ash has been exposed to some of the best coaches in the country during his time when he's coordinated defenses. I don't have a problem with it at all. Charlie Partridge is a hell of a coach. Aaron Henry is a hell of a coach. There is no pre-existing relationship with Brian Jean-Marie. Is that correct?
Yeah, just sharing an agent.
Okay, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, sharing an agent with Marcus, not Chris Ash. Anyone that looks at that as a negative, just look across the country. I don't know any coaching staffs or head coaches or coordinators that would do it any differently. Why you're going to bring a stranger in that you've never worked with, and now the game's on the line in week two at Texas A&M or wherever, and you're in a foxhole with a guy that you've never been in that foxhole with before. I think it's very natural for head coaches, coordinators to hire people that they're comfortable with and they know that they can trust when the game's on the line.
AB, would you see a pro, when do you see it as a good idea to hire, to branch out a little bit more, to get different thought processes in the room?
You know, I think that as well, if you're certainly very early in your career and you don't have a very broad-based set of contacts or knowledge of things being done in different ways, I think it's smart at that time. I also think if you've proved stagnant or stale in some of your operations, then you have to reexamine everything and say, you know, we really sucked at this and I've got to challenge myself. What does Marcus Freeman talk about all the time? Getting out of your comfort zone, not being comfortable. Mm-hmm. I think you have to be willing to challenge yourself and not be comfortable. Again, I'm really, really bullish on the Brian Jean-Marie impending move. I think that that's a significant, significant, almost done get for the Fighting Irish. I think that's a big time move. I think that Chris Ash has to have guys that he's comfortable with, because let's be realistic again here, guys. Notre Dame is already picking up all kinds of attention as one of those teams perceived as a lock for the 26 playoff field, one of those teams perceived as a very strong contender to win a national championship this year. These coaches have every reason in the world to make sure they make the best freaking hires possible, and they have to know – they have to know that they can coach their players hard, and they have to know they can coach their assistant coaches hard. And I think that that pays dividends right here.
Who could ask for a better duo than the at least the first two hirings of Partridge and Henry? I mean, whether they have connections to Chris Ash or not, I think they were great hires. And the fact that they do have connections to Chris Ash makes that bond even stronger.
And I would contend, like, when I hear about coaches from NFL coaches, again, the first person to text me, I got a text Friday about Aaron Henry, and I woke up Saturday morning in Vegas to a text from an NFL coach saying, hey, I think Aaron Henry to Notre Dame is happening. And when college coaches are on NFL coaches' radars, I think that's a sign of respect. One other quick thing, while Marcus and Brian Jean-Marie have not worked together, they've coached opposite one another for 3 years in a row when Brian was with USF and Marcus Freeman was at the University of Cincinnati. So they do have some familiarity there. Marcus has seen some of Brian Jean-Marie's units on the field against his own team in the past.
I enjoyed this one because it also has to do with coaching in a very coach-heavy podcast from Brady Quintessential. Also a great day. I should have given that one to Priester too. Rank these in order of offending your delicate sensibilities as a football aficionado. That's why I enjoyed this so much. A, poor clock management. B, overly aggressive on fourth down. In other words, like going for it deep in your own end. C, overly conservative play calling. D, poor timeout usage. I will say hint, hint right here. And E, the prevent defense when leading late in the game by one score. You have a clear number one or a clear one you don't care about. By the way, for poor clock management, he said, and math mistakes, and I don't only mean counting to 10 in an 11-person sport, which was a bit of a shock. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, only one to me is not offensive because that's the direction that the game is going, and that's going forward on fourth down. I mean, yeah, I think Marcus Freeman's really been at the forefront of that in college football the last couple of years. And but the two that I poor clock A and E, the poor clock management and then prevent defense. I mean, I don't know that's as obvious as it once was in the game. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah. For me, I'm same as you, TP. In fact, had I been forced to answer first, like Taskmaster O'Malley is prone to do, I was going to say, well, let's start by throwing B out because there's no offense there. Typically, you build your lead because you're aggressive and you thrive off of that aggression. So get rid of that one. That one's not an issue to me. A and C are the ones that drive me nuts. C is harder to quantify, but probably more exasperating because you know it when you see it in a game, and the questioner is making that point. But if you built a 30-10 halftime lead and you go into a shell in the second half and all of a sudden it's 30-27, Then you bring all these other factors into play, and it's because you decided to put a diaper on at halftime. So I hate that. I hate that. So for me, A and C would be the most annoying. The early timeout thing, D, poor timeout usage, it's unnerving. But if that's the first and second quarter, you should be able to overcome that. You should be able to overcome that.
I have – my only time I have – poor timeout usage for me is not the timeout where you're like, boy, they used two timeouts in the first quarter. It is – this is poor timeout usage for me. Fourth down at your own 47-yard line. Line up. No, we don't have what we want. Timeout. And then come punt. Just take the 5-yard penalty and punt.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Those are things that are insane to me that you can't have a coach. That's when you're like, you messed up. You don't know what you're doing here. But clock management's number one because you also have someone doing it for you. A head coach and a coordinator have a million things going on. Maybe that coordinator gets conservative at some point and punts from the 50 because he's like, dude, my defense is – wait. Or the head coach steps in and says, our defense will win this game. Punt that stupid ball on fourth and one. But clock management, you have – people have been assigned to this since Ray Handley and the Giants in the 1980s. And I always laugh because he was the clock management guy that became the head coach replacing Bill Parcells, for God's sakes. Clock management, you have to have someone telling you, no, coach. This is the timeout. No, coach. This is going on. That way you don't have to think about it.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to call a quote bad timeout.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to do it, right. But you have to do it. The example you gave Tim of, calling timeout and then punting. I mean, that's egregious. Yeah. You can't, but I mean, sometimes you still see that, but the fourth down thing I think is really interesting because I think we're going to see across the country, we're going to see more and more and more of fourth mm-hmm. down decisions. Now, in watching the NFL playoffs, I heard, you hear some commentary about going for it when you should kick a field goal, the game that Denver lost before the blizzard, the weather was great. And, Denver's up 7-0 and you go for it and don't get it. You sure would have liked to have kicked that field goal to take 10-0 lead when it became a blizzard. They had to have knowledge of the forecast coming up.
Yeah. That got nuts, though. That really did get nuts.
But the Denver head coach, Sean Payton, is often known as being pretty hard-headed. So he went with the decision that he made.
My last thing is poor timeout usage in basketball is the worst thing ever if you want to bring it all the way back to not calling timeouts when you need to call timeouts, when you can't get a shot off on the road to lose a November game. And you guys know what I'm talking about. But we will talk about less poor timeout usage in basketball coaching in our next podcast, which is this coming Thursday, February 5th. Is that right? Then we get to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, maybe some official Notre Dame hirings. I said pseudo hired because, they're never official until you can get the ink signed there. But it seems like Notre Dame is very close to finishing its coaching staff for 2026, and we'll know a lot more right after the Super Bowl. Until then, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of Football Scoop, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.